Okay, this is Bio 231. It's September 9th, and we're in the middle of the tissues chapter. But we're going to look at Blackboard a little bit, so I want to boot up the internet and look at Blackboard. So everybody has probably been doing some exercises and quizzes in Blackboard. When is the deadline? Every Thursday. That's right, every Thursday, except for that first week, and of course on Thanksgiving you don't have to do it. That's been postponed till Monday. Okay, so here's Blackboard, and then you need that funny little symbol, then your student number, and then your super secret password, and you can get in, but you don't have to worry. You're not taking as many classes as I am. So let's look here. You had a question about a quiz. Do you know your CRN number? 88. Okay, so let's see, the question about the quiz for week number 4. Now, it's great that somebody would be working on week number 4 because then the deadline is not to the 19th, but if you always stay maybe 1 week or 2 weeks ahead, you'll never miss a deadline, right? Even if something really weird happens and you can't just get to Blackboard Thursday afternoon or Thursday night. Okay, so this is week 4, skeletal tissues. Oh, I know what the problem is. Okay, this one I just activated so that you could come in here and work some of these interactive exercises for the quiz, the skull quiz, which Wednesday's group will take on Wednesday, the Monday group will take next Monday. Right, so here is just an interactive, like this one right here. Plug-in vulnerable should be, gee whiz, I don't want to do all of this. Activate. Let's see what happens. Oh, I didn't pick the right view. All right, you just have a lateral view, but what could you do? You could drag and drop some of these things, like Palatine process. Eventually, you're going to get to this. Oh, didn't like that. How about this? Oh, didn't like that. So that's what happens. Oh, I didn't put it on the, here, there we go. Okay, you got to follow the lead lines over. All right, so you can practice labeling the skull, the lateral view of the skull. You might have to update your, I don't know what I updated, some kind of flash player or something, I'm not sure. Okay, so that's why I don't have the quiz activated for number 4, for week number 4, because I didn't want to activate it until after the first exam. But maybe I'll go ahead and activate it anyway, since I opened up these interactive exercises for you to use for the skull. Okay. So this is the one we want right here. This should be a lateral view. This is what I sent in the email. Activate all plugins. Oh, even better. Ah, okay, so the Wednesday group is probably familiar with this, right? Okay. So, coronal suture, where would you find that? Right here. Okay, that's a coronal suture, so we would label that. Okay, and I don't hear any clapping or whooping around. There should be some audio, but oh well. Okay. So that's for Blackboard. And the other thing somebody had a question about, where can you find the lab schedule? Because the lab schedule didn't come out until after I put the syllabus together. All right, so probably in course information. Here's course information. Yeah, here's lab schedule. Okay, so anatomy lab schedule under course information right underneath the syllabus. Okay, so who had a question on that one? Yeah, okay, so it's there for you to download. If you can't get to Blackboard, you can email me and I'll send it as an attachment, but everybody probably has that. Okay, so what's today? The 9th, Monday, next Monday we have a lecture, and then the Wednesday right after that, so Wednesday of next week is the first exam, 1 through 6, except Chapter 3. We're not going to cover Chapter 3. Okay, and the way to prepare for that, for sure, use the exam study guides, because it tells you exactly what page numbers in a chapter you have to read, what the exam figures are, so you can practice labeling. End of chapter questions, make sure you go over those a whole bunch of times, and the online questions. So for instance, as far as the end of chapter questions go, the first time you work through those end of chapter questions, and that's after reading the chapter and the pre-lecture reading assignments and all that stuff, it might take you 45 minutes to go through those questions the first time. All right, but then you got to do it again. The second time, it might take you 35 minutes. The third time, it might take you 15 minutes. And then the fourth time, maybe 10, and then maybe the fifth or sixth time, you can do them all in 5 minutes. Guess what? When you can do them in 5 minutes, you're going to have a lot of fun on the exam. So that's kind of what you should be shooting for. Right, if it still takes you a half hour or 40 minutes to answer the end of chapter questions, then you're not prepared well enough for the lecture exam. Right, so look at those questions that help you develop the skills necessary to do well on the exam, and maybe work with in a group so that you can talk about the question and talk about the answers, because that activates so much more of your brain than if you just read something and think about it. Okay, and even if it's your grandma, even if it's your kids, just talk to them about things, okay, in anatomy. Okay. All right, so, let's look at some things for today. Well, definitely I want to be here. I want to be in here. And what else, where else do I want to be? Okay, don't forget, you can be printing these things out as we go. All right, so last time we started talking about tissues, how many major kinds of tissues are in your body? Yeah, there are four: epithelium, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue. You know some characteristics of each. You probably know the most about epithelium because, right, we talked about how you classify an epithelium by what, the number of layers, and then also by the shape of the cells. And we looked about at a number of microscope slides, and in lab you do that extensively this week. All right, so by layers, it's either simple or stratified. So if I see two layers in an epithelium, what kind of epithelium by layers is that? And if there's three layers, what is that? And if there's 15 layers, it's stratified, right? So only one is a special case. And then you have to make up your mind when you look at the cell types, whether it's a flat cell or pretty much square or columnar, right? You just have to look at the slide and probably in a couple locations to see what the general orientation of these cells are, what their general shape is. Probably not just one, because why can't you just look at one cell and know on a microscope slide? Because all slides have artifacts in them, and maybe you're just looking at a cell that wasn't cut just right, or it got squished when it was cut so that it made a nice thin section, right? So you have to get a general opinion, impression of the whole slide, not just one particular cell. Okay, so let's look at this epithelium right here. I'm going to turn some of the lights down so that you can see. That light I like, that light I don't like, and that one I don't like. Okay, so slide on the right over here, what kind of tissue are we looking at if we see this one? What is your brain just kind of zooming right into? You're going to say epithelium because here's a nice basement membrane. Here is the apical surface, so here's some free space with nothing in it. All right, so we know that's an epithelium. And another characteristic of epithelium, this is what I wanted to say, is that the cells are packed close together. The cell membranes are touching, unlike other kinds of tissues that we're going to look at, especially connective tissue, which is what we're going to look at next. And when you look at this slide, hopefully you can tell that there's one cell layer from the basement membrane to the apical surface, so we know this is a simple epithelium, right? And it is columnar. The shape of the cell is columnar. All right. And that probably wasn't too hard to tell because it's labeled on the slide. All right, this is probably where we left off last time. All right, so we're moving into the second kind of tissue. Right, so let's see what we got for that. And that's a connective tissue. Right, and a connective tissue holds your body together, holds cells together, holds different layers together. Like, for instance, a dense regular connective tissue makes a tendon, and a tendon connects a muscle to a bone. So when that muscle contracts, guess what else moves? The bone moves with it. Right? And a ligament is connective tissue because it connects one bone to another bone, and usually it reduces motion or stabilizes the association between those two bones. Okay? Another kind of connective tissue is a little bit funny. It's a fluid connective tissue. It connects your lungs with your brain, with your heart, right? And that is blood, for instance, because in your lungs it picks up oxygen, and then it goes through your heart, delivers that oxygen to your heart, or maybe to your brain, and then back to the lungs again. So it connects all parts of your body functionally. All right, so when we look at this slide right here, a general kind of connective tissue, right, we see that it has fibers. Here's a big, thick fiber that's the strongest one, that's collagen. It's got a little bit weaker ones. They're thinner, but this one here is interesting because you can pull it from end to end and it's going to stretch out without getting damaged, and then if you let go, it's going to snap back to its original shape. So that's an elastic fiber. Thanks. And then the weakest ones, by far the weakest, are these reticular fibers. Okay, so I know this is a connective tissue because here I see a cell, and then over here I see a neighboring cell, and there's a big space between the cells. That space is very special in a connective tissue. We call that the matrix, right? And so the matrix has these fibers in it, right? Collagen the strongest, elastic, and then reticular the weakest, and then the elastic is right in the middle. And the cell that secretes these fibers is called a fibroblast. So that should be pretty easy to remember. The last compartment in the matrix besides fibers is this jelly-like material that we call ground substance. There are proteins in here that act like gelatin or jello, and that holds a lot of water in our body. Right? It's not strong, there are no fibers in there, but its main purpose is to hold a lot of water, but then it also allows for materials to diffuse through water through this ground substance to get from one cell to another. So this is a pretty good model on how you should visualize a connective tissue. Unlike an epithelium, there's a big space between cells, and it's the space between cells that give a connective tissue its special properties. Right? Not the intracellular material, but the extracellular material, or stuff that's in the matrix. Okay. First one we looked at, areolar connective tissue. I see some collagen fibers. Here's one going mostly from top to bottom. There are some that are going from right to left. Here's a little bit from left to right, but it also goes from top to bottom. So collagen takes all kinds of different orientations in areolar connective tissue, and I do see some elastic fibers in here. So this tissue is not very strong because it doesn't have a lot of collagen associated with it, but at least there is some, right, that holds this particular tissue together. Here I see a nucleus of a fibroblast, and then away over here I see another nucleus of a fibroblast. So would you call this an epithelium? Absolutely not, because these cells are way too far apart, right? Plus you see all these fibers in there. And I see ground substance. Here's some ground substance. So what is this area right here that contains fibers and ground substance? Yeah, that it's a part of the matrix, but it's a subcategory of the matrix. No fibers right in this area. What do we call that? That we call ground substance, and it's filled mostly with water, right? So there's proteins in there that hold a lot of water. This kind of connective tissue we would see with as a part of the basement membrane of an epithelium, right? So this drawing right here is not what we see in the micrograph. It's the layer that's underneath the epithelium. And if we look at this epithelium, it's kind of fun. You can look at this. This might be somebody's favorite epithelium. How would you classify this epithelium? Okay, I see like a pillow here and a pillow here and a pillow here. Yeah, it's transitional. That's a transitional, okay, if I were to analyze that. Here's an atypical connective tissue, because we said for connective tissue, the important junk that's in that tissue is in the matrix outside of the cells. But in this particular connective tissue, what's important is intracellular. It's what's inside the cell. So here is an exception to that rule. And here is an adipocyte, otherwise known as a fat cell, but you should call it an adipocyte. That sounds a little bit more educated than a fat cell. And here is a vesicle or a vacuole within the adipocyte that contains lipid. There's just a drop of oil right here, microscopic drop of oil. And of course that oil is important because it's an energy source, and other things could be made from this fat, namely like the plasma membrane and all other membranes. Here is that little bit of cytoplasm that an adipocyte has. I can see the nucleus with the little cytoplasm that all belongs to this one cell right here. Another reason why this is atypical, because here's an adipocyte and here's another one. Is there a big space between them? No, it sort of looks more like an epithelium, but it's not. This is still a connective tissue. Okay. And it's, I don't see any collagen, so it's not a strong one. It's a pretty weak one. Here's a connective tissue, and I see some fibers that stain very, very dark, and it looks very gnarly, like a root of a tree or something. And this is characteristic of reticular fibers. They're not strong. This is at really high magnification, 555 times, plus I think the photograph was blown up a little bit more. Right? This kind of connect, these fibers are what in terms of strength of the three fibers that we looked at? It's the weakest, exactly right. So these fibers are so weak, okay, that you could never, if an organ that has these fibers and only these fibers, if it becomes lacerated or ripped, that organ can never be sutured back together because these fibers are so weak. As soon as you place a stitch or a suture, just placement of that suture will cause even more ripping of these reticular fibers. And a perfect example of that is the spleen. So the spleen, it can be easily damaged and it can't be repaired either surgically. Okay? When it's damaged, the damaged part just has to be removed by tying off a blood vessel that I see here and then removing that part of the spleen, okay, that blood vessel feeds. Okay. Here is a connective tissue. Again, here is a cell. Here's another cell way down over here. The matrix is filled with a big, strong collagen fiber oriented in just one direction from right to left. And if you pull on that fiber from right to left, it's almost impossible to damage. It's not going to stretch. You know, unless you get into an airplane accident or a really bad car accident, you could damage that fiber, but generally speaking, you can't. But if you pull from top to bottom, which is side to side on this illustration, then it's easy to separate collagen fibers, right, from within the middle of a tendon or a ligament. Right, so when somebody twists a joint the wrong way, that kind of tendinous or ligamentous injury can occur, right, because you're pulling on that tissue in the wrong direction. So this is what we call dense regular connective tissue. The previous slide right here, I see some collagen coming out of the plane, kind of coming right at you. I see some that are going right to left and then some kind of curling around. This is dense irregular connective tissue. Doesn't make ligaments and tendons, but it makes something that we call a joint capsule, a fibrous capsule around joints. All right, so it's not particularly strong or super strong in one direction, but it's kind of strong in all directions. It has more strength than an areolar connective tissue. There are some connective tissues that have just elastic fibers, and I don't have enough magnification. Here's only 85 power to show you elastic fibers. And a good place for this, for instance, I'll mention it before we get into the cardiovascular system, is in large arteries, like the aorta coming off the base of the heart. When the heart contracts, it pushes a big bolus of blood into the aorta, and the aorta expands. Okay, it accepts all that blood, and then the heart goes into relaxation, and our blood pressure would drop, okay, except for what happened? What happened to all that blood in the aorta? The aorta has expanded. When the heart relaxes, then the aorta pushes the rest of that blood to the rest of your body. So the elastic properties of very large arteries is important to maintain blood flow, even though the heart is in a phase that we call diastole, which is a relaxation phase, right? And it's important for the heart to go into that relaxation phase because then the heart's going to fill up with blood. Because if the heart contracts and if there's no blood there, then that contraction won't help anybody, right? Okay. Here is kind of a nice connective tissue to look at. This is cartilage. And in particular, I see just ground substance. I don't see any fibers in the matrix. And again, it's easy to see this is a connective tissue because the cells are far apart. And here is a cell that is in cartilage. We call that a chondrocyte. So anytime you hear that term chondro, guess what you should be thinking? You should be thinking of cartilage. That's right. That's just a general term for cartilage. And this chondrocyte, here's the plasma membrane of the chondrocyte, is in a bubble within the matrix. That little bubble is what we call a lacuna. So here it is, a lacuna. It's just a little lagoon or a bubble that separates the chondrocyte from the rest of the matrix. And the matrix for hyaline cartilage, like I said, doesn't have any fibers. It contains a lot of water. It's not very strong. Right, but it's kind of slippery, so it's also good for covering the ends of bones that rub up against each other. Right, so it protects the ends of bones. It prevents, for instance, arthritis from occurring. Now, there is something missing in cartilage. Okay, do you see any blood vessels right here? That illustration that I first showed you had a blood vessel in it. Connective tissue typically does have a blood vessel, but cartilage right here that we're looking at does not. All right, so that there are some good things and bad things about that. Good thing is that it's a lot lighter to move around. All right. Another good thing is when cartilage is damaged, it doesn't hemorrhage. You can't bleed to death when you damage cartilage by itself, right? Which is kind of handy. But once cartilage is damaged, what is the downside to not having a blood supply? It does not heal. That's right. Just does not heal. So that certainly is not something that's good. Here is another kind of cartilage. Right, so here is a chondrocyte, here is a lacunae, and here is the matrix. Now, what can you tell me about the matrix here and here and here? Ah, I see fibers. That's right. So here is a matrix with fibers. And so this is not hyaline cartilage. This is what we call elastic cartilage. Right, because here is these elastic fibers. And, of course, a really good example of that would be your ear. You can bend your ear. I wouldn't do it like 100 times a day, but a couple times you can bend it. Because you can damage elastic fibers, they're not strong like collagen, and if you really pound an ear or bend it severely, then these elastic fibers don't grow back exactly the way they should, and your ear will take a different kind of funny shape. And maybe the function of that ear will change as well. Okay? Like I just learned in lab, sometimes when people have what we call that cauliflower ear, you can't put a little earbud in your ear anymore to listen to your iPhone. Right? So the function does change to some degree. Okay, another kind of cartilage. So this is a little bit stronger than hyaline cartilage, but there is another cartilage that's even stronger still and is loaded with collagen fibers that I see. They're all oriented in the same direction. Here's a lacunae with what kind of cell in this cartilage? A chondrocyte, because it's cartilage, yeah. So here is a chondrocyte, and so we call this fibrocartilage. And of the four major kinds of tissues, What kind of tissue is fibrocartilage? What are the four kinds? Oh, I should be showing you some of these slides, but you can track along with your word slides. It's a connective tissue, right? So on the practicum, all right, if I were to show you this slide right here, okay, you would say fibrocartilage, connective tissue. Don't say fibrocartilage epithelium or fibrocartilage muscle or fibrocartilage nervous tissue, right? That just won't match up. So you got to tell me the specific name, like fibrocartilage, and then the general name that it fits into, whether it's connective, epithelium, muscle, or nervous tissue. And here's that connective tissue. All right, so that's it for cartilage. Usually when I look at cartilage underneath the microscope, I just see kind of a speckle pattern. That's the best way for me to describe what I see. And then I look for fibers to see how many they are or are there and whether they're thick or thin fibers. Okay, so for cartilage, I see a speckle pattern. For dense regular connective tissue, right, I just see these layers upon layers. And I think I forgot to tell you what I see when I look at areolar connective tissue. I probably told some labs. Who knows what I see when I look at this slide right here? Anybody remember?
Yeah.
I see stained glass window. Okay, all put together, little fractured patterns, right? And it might have some colors of blue in there. It might have some colors of yellow if there's adipocytes. So that's why I see something like a stained glass window. Maybe some of you don't know what a stained glass window is. I think everybody does. Okay. All right, and adipose connective tissue just looks like a sponge, right? So that's easy to recognize. And a speckle pattern, the speckle pattern would be cartilage of some kind, yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The adipose
site,
you said the cytoplasm is
the
nucleus?
It surrounds the nucleus? Yeah, let me go back. Let's see if I can zoom in. Because the cytoplasm is watery, right? The nucleus is dissolved in cytoplasm, which the solvent is water, and you know that oil and water just don't mix, right? So we don't have cytoplasm within this vacuole that contains fat because it just can't get in there. Or if it does, it's just going to get pushed right out again, okay? So this area right here, I see just a little bulge. I don't know if it projects on the big projector very much, but there's a little bulge right here that has a little bit of cytoplasm, and that's where the nucleus is. Okay, so it's just all pushed to one side. Yeah.
The vacuole, kind of like in the first cell, feeling about how like travels out.
This one right here probably would not travel out. It's inside the cell. Yeah. You saw like a lysosome, peroxisome inside of a cell. Okay, but this is what? This is like 100 times the size of a regular little vesicle inside the cell. And it's filled with fat, which is a storage form for that fat, storage form of energy. Yeah. But it's intracellular. That's why it's a strange kind of connective tissue. Okay, so here are the cartilages. And then this one is really easy to recognize. Doesn't even look like an animal slide, looks kind of like a plant slide, because when I look at this, I see like a transverse section through a tree, and I see tree rings right here, but of course it's not. That's just an easy way to look at it at first. These rings are what we call lamellae. In the very center is a central canal. Sometimes we call that Haversian canal, and there's blood vessels in this central canal. And here is a lacunae with a cell on the inside of it. So bone is a living tissue. This cell is not a chondrocyte. It's not labeled on this slide, but you should know what its name is. It's called an osteocyte, osteo. So if chondro means cartilage, guess what osteo means? It means bone. That's a bone cell. Okay, and that bone cell is secreting material into the matrix right here, which you know is made up of a lot of calcium, but there's some phosphate in there as well as collagen fibers. All right. And bone is really, really strong, right? If you push on the top down and you push on the bottom up, you try to compress a bone, you know, it's just not going to compress. Again, unless you're in an automobile accident or plane accident, something like that. But let's just pretend this marker right here is a bone, a long bone in your body, right? If I were to grab it on end to end and try to bend it in the middle, I'm bending it a little bit, I bet I could snap this thing if I were to press the ends really, really hard, okay? But if I press from top to bottom, how hard would I have to press to break this marker? Well, I probably never could, right? I just can't press hard enough, okay? Because a tube is very strong. It resists compression. So bones are super strong because it's not one tube. It's what? It's tubes inside tubes inside tubes, which are next to tubes inside tubes inside tubes. Right, and around all these tubes inside tubes that are next to tubes, there are even tubes on the outside of the bone. Right, so bone is almost impossible to compress, but you can fracture it, right, if you bend it from the side, right, side injuries. Right, so you got lamellae, you got blood vessels right here. Okay, that could be good or bad. What's the bad thing about fracturing a bone? It bleeds, it hemorrhages. As a matter of fact, if it's a large bone and you're away from medical facilities, you can hemorrhage to death, right, as a result of that. So fractures can be really serious. But what's the upside for that? What's the upside of having a vascularized bone tissue? It heals really fast, right? Cartilage never, bone maybe 4 weeks. That's really fast, right? That's probably even faster than the period between lecture exams in here, right? So 4 weeks is really, really fast, as long as it's taken care of. What do we do for most fractures so that they don't break or bend while they're healing? They're usually casted, right? Okay, if at all possible. All right, so you got osteocytes. So this is easy to see. And then here's another kind of strange connective tissue. It does connect all the different parts of your body except for epithelium. And this is blood CT. On a practical, make sure you tell me it's not epithelium, that it is a CT, connective tissue, not a muscle. And these are what we call red blood cells. Sometimes we call them erythrocytes. Erythro just means red. Cyte means cell. They carry oxygen from your lungs to other places in your body that need oxygen. All right, these erythrocytes are red blood cells. These are white blood cells. They don't look white because they've been stained, just like we did for our buccal cells in lab. So they stand out very nice. We can see the nucleus right here. But in real life, they're going to kind of look like a cream color in a test tube. So we call these white blood cells or a leukocyte. Leuko means white. There might be some zoologists here in class. And you know the symbol, what's the animal symbol for the United States? It's even put on our dollar bills and things like that. Yeah, a bald eagle. And a bald eagle's not bald. It's got feathers up there, but what color are the feathers? They're white, right? And so the scientific name for a bald eagle is leucocephalus. Leuco means white, right? So leukocyte is just this white cell. Cephalic just means head, right? The great white feathered bird. Okay, so we got red blood cells. We got two different kinds of white blood cells, and I want you to be able to identify these by the shape of the nucleus. They might have a little bit different color, which of course I can't see very well. Okay, the cytoplasm looks a little different. I don't know if the color is the color of the cytoplasm here different than the color of the cytoplasm here? No? Looks pretty similar. One might be purple, one might be pink, one might be blue, one might be... Okay. So there are five different kinds of white blood cells. Okay, because, and you could tell them by the different colors in the cytoplasm, the shape of the nucleus. But I can't really teach you, or I can't even test you on those different kinds of white blood cells, because I could ask you and you could tell me anything and I wouldn't know, right? So that's just the way it goes. But this is easy to tell because a lymphocyte has the nucleus. Here's a big nucleus. It almost is the whole extent of the cell, right? But this neutrophil right here, which is the most common kind, has all of these lobes to it. So it's easy to distinguish a lymphocyte from a neutrophil. And in lab, we should be able to find both of these because they're both fairly common. But especially this neutrophil. Okay. So this is a connective tissue that you're going to call blood. And the matrix has a special name in blood because it's a fluid matrix. It's not doesn't really have ground substance, but it's like a modified ground substance. This is what we call plasma. That's the fluid part of blood. And just like many other connective tissues that have fibers, collagen fibers, elastic fibers, blood does have fibers in the plasma. But when blood is flowing through a normal blood vessel, those fibers are dissolved. They don't precipitate out. They don't really become fibers. But as soon as you cut yourself, guess what happens to those fibers that are in solution? They precipitate out and become fibers, and they form a net, and that prevents further blood loss because it can trap these blood cells right before they can leak out of your body. We call that fibrin. Okay, so it does have protein fibers, but normally they're just dissolved in solution. Okay, so that's the kind of connective tissues that you should be aware of. Maybe I'll talk about this later on in lecture. A membrane, like we see right here, the cutaneous membrane, that's your skin. And we're looking at skin this week. And a membrane has more than one connective tissue, more than one kind of tissue in layers. Like this cutaneous membrane has an epithelium on the top and then a deep layer that's made out of connective tissue. The deep tissue is called the dermis, and the epithelium that's on top of the dermis is called the epidermis. Epi means on top of. Okay, so a membrane has more than one kind of tissue, and hence when we look at the integumentary system, it's really what? It's an organ system, because that's the definition of an organ. So a membrane really is an organ, because it's made of a couple different kinds of tissues in your body. Okay, let's move on to muscle, and then I'll come back to those other slides. Okay, so muscle is specialized to do what?
Contract.
Yeah, to contract, right? And usually one end of a muscle is attached to one place and another end of the muscle is attached to another place. And when that muscle contracts, these two places get pulled closer together. Right? And there are three kinds of muscle. There's skeletal muscle, which we see right here. And when you look at the slide, does anything stand out at you? All those stripes. And we call them striations. That's right. As due to the internal machinery that causes a muscle to contract, we're going to look at that when we get into the muscle chapter. A skeletal muscle cell is also very long and narrow, and it looks like a fiber, looks like a thread. And hence, that's another name for this particular kind of cell. We call it a muscle fiber or a muscle cell. And that's because at one time during development, this long fiber was composed of maybe 100 different cells that lined up all in a row, and then the membrane that separated the cells disappeared, so all these cells in this line fused together to make one big long muscle fiber. And if there were 100 cells at the beginning, how many nuclei are in this muscle fiber? There's going to be 100, right? So here's a strange kind of cell. It's really long, and it's multinucleate because of the way that it develops. Right, and we call it skeletal muscle because what is it attached to? It's attached to your skeleton. So when it contracts, your skeleton moves, and you have voluntary control over your skeleton. You can cause these muscles to contract or relax. Like I could use a drink right now, right? I can just reach out, have a drink. And whenever I tell this muscle to contract with my brain, it just obeys, can never make up its own mind. And so we call that voluntary muscle. And of all the things in your body, that's the only thing that your mind can control. Everything else, skeletal muscle is the only thing that you have voluntary control of. Everything else is controlled involuntarily via the autonomic nervous system or by hormones or some other kinds of mechanisms. Okay. All right, here's another kind of muscle. I see a similarity with skeletal muscle. What's similar with this one here? I see striations. Yeah, the internal machinery is very similar. But now these cells are not long and narrow, they're short. Here's the end of one, and here's the other end of that same cell. So they're real, real short. These junctions between neighboring cells are called an intercalated disc, and they're kind of special because they have special junctions between them that glue the two cells together. So when this one contracts and this one contracts, they don't pull apart. Right? This is what makes up cardiac muscle or your heart. And so that's good. These muscles can't pull apart because otherwise you'd have a hole in your heart, right? These intercalated discs also have a special way of transmitting electrical information from one cell to the neighbor cell over here. Because the heart has to contract as a unit to pump blood. If one part contracts and then relaxes and then another part contracts and relaxes, blood is just going to swish around inside the heart and it's not going to go to your brain or lungs or anything. Right, so the heart has to contract as a unit. So if one cell is stimulated into contracting, guess what? Because of these intercalated discs, the whole heart contracts. Not only from left to right, but because the cells are branched, like I see a branch here, I see another branch here, okay, I see branches all over the place. If a top cell or superficial cell gets stimulated, the stimulation works its way all the way through the whole wall of the heart from top to bottom. So indeed, the heart contracts as a unit. Now, why would that not be good for skeletal muscle? Okay, because it might tear, yeah, because if you contract all your muscles really, really hard, you might actually tear something, maximal contraction. Indeed, you would. People that lift weights know that. Okay, but what else? Well, if I reach out to get a drink of water right here, if all the skeletal muscles in my body contracted, then, you know, I would just kind of flinch and I would never be able to get anything to drink because all the muscles in my body would be contracted. Okay? So it's great for your heart, but it would be really terrible design for skeletal muscle. So all skeletal muscles are electrically isolated from each other so that only specific fibers contract. Okay? Not so with the heart muscle. The last kind of muscle, and heart muscle, is involuntary. You can't control, right? You can't stop your heart. Okay? You can stop breathing, you can hold your breath, maybe you could scare your parents half to death, you can hold your breath, okay, hold it, and then you're going to pass out because you don't have air, you don't have oxygen going to your brain, and as soon as you pass out, guess what's automatically going to happen? You're going to start breathing again. Okay, you can't do that with your heart. Okay, you might be... So the heart is under involuntary control. Okay, but I think we should take a quiz right now. So put all your books away, okay, and get a pen out. What happened to your heart rate? Okay, so you don't have control of your heart, but your instructor does, right? Okay, so you can influence your heart rate. Yes, I know, that was a nasty trick. You can influence your heart rate, but you can't really control it like skeletal muscle, right? If you meditate, you can slow your heart down. If you think of other things, like if you're an athlete and you're about to do some exercise on a balance beam or something, your heart is going to, you're going to anticipate that, your heart rate is going to increase, okay? But it's only some slight influence, not like a skeletal muscle. Here's another involuntary muscle. This is smooth muscle. It kind of looks like a football that's been stretched out. Now, there's something a lot different about this muscle compared to the other two. What's missing? That's a hint. What's missing? No striations. The internal machinery is totally different in smooth muscle, and it's used in the walls of hollow organs like respiratory tract, reproductive tract, digestive tract. And these muscles shorten, so they contract, right, but in a little bit different way. And their control is a little bit different. They sometimes get information from two different kinds of nervous systems in your body. And these skeletal muscles right here can even make up their own mind if they're going to contract or how much they're going to contract based on information from those two nervous systems. Unlike skeletal muscle. If you tell a skeletal muscle to contract, what's it going to do? It's just going to contract. This muscle right here, smooth muscle, can say, oh, I don't have to contract because I'm getting information from another part of the body that says that I shouldn't. Right? So that's kind of interesting. These muscles can have a mind of their own depending on what information they receive. All right, so those are the three kinds of muscle. And then nervous tissue. We don't go over this so much in lab, but I do want to go over it in lecture. This is the last kind of tissue, and there are basically two kinds of cells, generally speaking, that make up nervous tissue. There are some cells that send electrical information very rapidly over long distances, maybe from your brain all the way down to the tip of your toe, and it can do that in a split second using electrical impulses. And let's look at the illustration of one of these types of cells first. This is what we call a neuron. And this is the one responsible for sending electrical impulses. A neuron has a nucleus. It has a bunch of cytoplasm in this swelling, this one end of the neuron. Right? And this is what we call the cell body that contains the nucleus and a bunch of cytoplasm, including mitochondria, endoplasmic reticulum, all of that kind of stuff. Okay? And another name for this area, sometimes we call this the soma. And soma is another name for body. Okay, so generally, if we want to talk about some general part of you that's your body, we call that a somatic region. So soma means some body part, body region, right? So here is the soma of a neuron. And then I see some projections. Sometimes we call a projection a process in anatomy. So here is a short process that's highly branched on one end of the cell. And then I see a really thick process that's long. Right, so there's two different kinds of processes. These short ones that are highly branched, these are what we call dendrites. And this single long one is what we call an axon. And then the axon, you can see, breaks into little pieces, into branches down here at the terminal end. And we're going to call that an axon terminus. All right, so we said the job of a neuron, this nerve cell right here, is to transmit information in an electrical form. And information always flows, right, from dendrite to cell body, down an axon to the axon terminus. Right, so that's the best way to think of how a neuron works. Information goes dendrite, cell body, down an axon, and electrical information doesn't go back in the opposite direction. Maybe some information goes back, but not fast electrical information. All right, so if it goes from dendrite to cell body, down the axon, we call that antrograde transmission. If it goes backward, does anybody know what backwards means? The word retrograde. Yeah, and you should be familiar with those terms. Even our physiology book doesn't use those terms, but that's a shame, right? Antrograde means in the forward direction. Retrograde means in the reverse direction. So be familiar with those. So this is one kind of nerve cell. I see a micrograph over here. Here is, what does this look like right here? Here's the nucleus. What does that look like? that looks like the soma, and you said cell body, exactly the same thing. Here is that long axon coming out of it, but I don't really see the dendrites poking off because they're probably too thin. Right, but I do see some other nuclei scattered around in here. All of this slide is still nervous tissue, and so that shows us that there's some other things that make up nervous tissue besides neurons, and these are support cells. Right, and they surround the neuron, sometimes they nourish the neuron, sometimes they tell neurons how to make connections between other neurons, and they're fascinating, but we can't talk much about them right now because we got to talk about other things. We'll look at what these other cells do when we get into the nervous system. So they're called support cells, or sometimes neuroglia cells, or neuroglial cells, or glia. Okay. I don't think I have a picture of a glial cell. I sure don't. All right, so what do we want to go back to? We want to go back to membranes. Nice. Okay. All right, so a membrane is a thin sheet or layer that covers a structure, maybe lines a cavity. Sounds like an epithelium. Okay, but an epithelium is one part of a membrane. Remember, we showed you the cutaneous membrane that surrounds your body. That's your skin, your integumentary system. All right, and a membrane has usually an epithelium plus some kind of connective tissue, usually an areolar or a loose connective tissue. All right, so some of these things are a little bit confusing to look at. Here is that cutaneous membrane. That's easy to look at. Okay, let's look at this picture right here. I see a membrane, okay, that lines your nasal cavity and your oral cavity, and it goes back over through here. Here's a membrane on the inside of your lungs, covers all of these little tubes. Okay, this kind of membrane that lines a cavity that's open to the outside world is called a mucous membrane. Membrane open to the outside world is a mucous membrane, lines body cavities open to the exterior. That's good. And even your oral cavity, of course, that's open to the outside world, that's a mucous membrane. The membrane that is surrounds on the inside your stomach, that's a mucous membrane because that's really not in your body, right? That's really outside your body. It's just part of the tube that's running through your body. Right, so that's not really inside. That has a mucous membrane. Some mucous membranes secrete mucus. Not all mucous membranes do. That's not a good definition. The definition is if it lines a cavity open to the outside world. Digestive tract, reproductive tract would all be fantastic examples. But you did learn about a cell that can secrete mucus onto the surface of this membrane right here. And what kind of cell was that? A goblet cell. That's right, a goblet cell. It's sort of interesting because it's a unicellular gland. Most glands are made up of hundreds of cells, but here is a gland that's just one single cell, and that's a goblet cell. Okay. The other kind of membrane that I see on this figure right here is a membrane that surrounds a cavity that's not open to the outside world. Right, the inside of your lung is open to the air via this nasal passageway here, but on the outside of the lung, that's not open to the outside world. That's just a completely enclosed cavity, which you know to be the, what cavity is that, that the lungs are in? That's the pleural cavity, right? That's the pleural cavity. And so here is a cavity that's not open to the outside world. We're going to call that a serous cavity. Right, S-E-R-O-U-S. Do I have it on the next slide? Yeah, a serous membrane. The membrane that lines the pleural cavity is a serous membrane. Right, so those are the two kinds of membranes that we want to be aware of. Open to the outside world, mucus. Closed to the outside world, like I see right here, that's a serous membrane. Okay, a mucous membrane only has one main division to it. A serous membrane has actually got three. Right? I see one here on the surface of the body wall. I see one right on the surface of the lung, and then I see a space between those two divisions of this membrane. So it's got all three of those components. So let's go to this slide right here, and let's look at this one. Okay, I'm going to have to zoom in. Then I'm going to lose my arrow, but that's okay. Okay, so here I see the pleural cavity, and that's separated by this cavity right here. What's just this one right here? Let's review a little bit. That's the pericardial cavity. But don't forget this whole thing that separates the pleural cavities from right to left, even up in this region here. Yeah, mediastinum. Of course, that's a real important space because it contains all these great blood vessels as well as the heart. All right, so we said that there are three divisions to a serous membrane. A superficial membrane, a deep one right on the surface of that visceral organ. So here is a visceral organ, and then a space between them. Okay, so the division of the serous membrane right on the organ is called the visceral serous membrane. And the one that's superficial to that, lining the outside body cavity, that's what we call the parietal division. So we got parietal division, visceral division, and we have a space between the two that is filled with fluid. And that's called serous fluid. Hence, that's how we call that a serous membrane. Right, serous fluid. So here is that same membrane, a serous membrane around the lungs. Right on the surface of the lung is the visceral pleura. On the body wall is the parietal division of the pleural membrane, and there is serous fluid between the two. And these spaces can become infected. They can have an infection, and this is probably pretty dangerous. You have an infection that surrounds the heart in the serous membrane, and that's called a pericarditis. Pericarditis is an infection of the serous membrane around the heart, and this membrane, instead of being really, the serous space, instead of being really thin, it starts to enlarge. It gets thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker, filled with fluid, and that's really terrible. For what reason? Just forget about the infection, but just for mechanical reasons, that's really terrible. Yeah, it's going to compress the heart. Remember, the heart has to relax to fill with blood, but if that serous fluid is compressing the heart, even when the heart's relaxed, it doesn't fill with blood, so when the heart does contract, it has no blood to pump. Okay, not good. But pretty easy to treat. You just jab a needle in there and suck that fluid out, and you feel so much better immediately. But of course, you need to treat that infection to make sure that fluid doesn't return. Okay, you can have an infection of the pleural space right here. It can fill up with fluid, and of course, you'll feel miserable as well because then that compresses the lungs. But that's actually painful. You can't feel pericarditis. Okay, but you can feel when you get an inflammation of the pleural membrane because it feels like somebody has a knife and is stabbing you in the chest. Okay, whenever you try to take a breath because you're stretching these membranes. And patients in that condition are just miserable because they have no good choices. They have two choices, right? They can breathe and get stabbed in the chest, or they can just hold their breath. What's better? Well, neither is really good for a long period of time, right? You'll feel miserable if you hold your breath for more than 30 seconds, and then you take a breath, and then you get stabbed in the chest. You're really miserable. So what can we do for patients in that condition? No matter what they do, they feel pain. Well, opiates, right? And you get opiates on board, and they can start to breathe a little bit, and again, you can jab a needle in there and suck that fluid out, and they'll thank you. Primarily for giving them opiates. But, of course, it's really nice to be able to breathe. Okay? Okay, and so we call this condition not pericarditis, but pleurisy. Pleurisy is an inflammation of the pleural membrane. Okay, we've got another membrane, right? And that's in the thoracic cavity, but in the abdominal pelvic cavity. And I'll have to zoom back out. Okay, so here's the... my cursor. Here is the abdominal cavity. Sign-in sheet is going around. Don't forget to sign it. If you don't sign the sign-in sheet, guess what? You're not here. Yeah, so make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. That's your receipt that you're in class. All right, so here's the abdominal cavity. Then down over here we have the pelvic cavity. Of course, they're connected together. There's nothing that separates them. So we could call that the abdominal pelvic cavity, but even a better term would be the peritoneal cavity, right? So peritoneal cavity is the same thing as abdominal pelvic cavity. And there's a membrane that is on the surface of all these visceral organs, right? And we call that the peritoneum after the peritoneal cavity. And the peritoneum is a serous membrane, so it has three divisions. The division right on the surface of an organ, like this could be liver right here, that's the visceral division of the peritoneum, and then here is the second part that lines the body wall. That's the parietal peritoneum. So we got superficially parietal peritoneum, serous fluid and the visceral peritoneum right there, right, surrounding all these organs. And this peritoneum is even a little bit special because you can see this peritoneum is used to position these organs and to suspend all of these organs like large intestine and small intestine so they just don't flop around everywhere inside your peritoneal cavity. Okay, they're in a particular location. All right, so if you think, can you see the difference between a mucous membrane versus a serous membrane? What is a mucous membrane? What kind of cavity does a mucous membrane? Open to the outside world. Oral cavity, nasal cavity, for instance. And a serous membrane? Completely enclosed. There's no passageway from that cavity to the outside world, no matter how hard you try. All right, so those are the three main serous membranes. Here are the three divisions. Other kind of membranes in your body. Cutaneous, we looked at. That's your skin. And you know that the skin has an epithelium superficially and then connective tissue that's deep. We call connective tissue the dermis. Right? And there's another cavity that's at the ends of bones that articulate with each other. And if those bones move to form a joint, we call that a synovial cavity, right? And lining that cavity is a synovial membrane. And it's not really a serous membrane, but it does secrete a fluid into the joint that lubricates the hyaline cartilage at the end of the bones. So that's a synovial cavity. There's a membrane that surrounds every bone in your body. And when we talked about connective tissue, we said there's a word that means cartilage. What's the word that means cartilage? Chondro, and there's a word that means bone. Osteo, that's right. So here is the periosteum. Peri is a word that means surrounding. And what is it surrounding? If you just analyze that word, it's surrounding a bone. It's a membrane on the outside of every bone, and it covers every particular surface on the outside of a bone. Right? And then there's the endosteum. What kind of organ would you find an endosteum in? Cartilage? Muscle? You would say bone, yeah. Osteo right there. Osteum has to do with bone. And endo means on the inside. There are cavities on the insides of bones. And there's a membrane that lines every internal surface of a bone. Right? And we call that the endosteum. All right, a couple other terms right here that are pretty important for you to know, and it's good to know. Cortical versus medullary. Right? So most organs have a cortical region and a medullary region. And I'll be talking about this, so you've got to know what I'm talking about. The cortical region of any organ is the superficial part, which means what? Kind of toward the surface, right? Okay. And the medullary region of an organ is the deep part, right? So you can think of it as being like underneath the cortical region. So cortex is superficial, medullary is deep. So even bone has a cortical region and a medullary region. The adrenal gland has adrenal cortex and adrenal medulla. And now you kind of know which one is superficial and which one is deep, right? The adrenal medulla is deep. It's underneath the adrenal cortex. Okay. So that's important to know. All right. Now what about tissues? Who's got a question about anything in tissues? I do want to go over some slides with you right now, but does anybody have a question? Anybody have a question? Lecture notes? I don't see any hands. Okay, there are a lot of pieces in this chapter. Probably looked really difficult the first time you looked at this chapter and read this chapter, but now maybe it's looking a little bit better. Lecture notes. Maybe this is it. This is sort of it. Okay, I want to look at 2 and 2. Okay, so here's just a fast practice for you, and I think I have something like this in Blackboard, or maybe it's on my personal website. We'll have to go look and see where it is. All right, so here's a slide, and when I see this slide right here, what do I see? I see nothing. Okay, I just see a square, because this is a little rest station for you to kind of get your thoughts together. So the next slide is a picture that you should be able to analyze. All right, so what do I see right here? Okay, yeah, name this tissue. It is bone, the specific kind, but what general category does it fit into? It's CT, bone CT. So on a practicum, you can put CT. That's fine. You don't have to spell that out. Bone CT, because I see these tree rings. And then also for the practicum, you should tell me what these lead lines are pointing to as well. All right, so this could be a particular question on the practicum. All right, so bone CT. And on a practicum, you're going to have a minute or a minute and a half per station, and some of you answered this question in less than a second, which is fantastic, but you're going to be bored during the practicum. But if you're bored during the practicum, that's fine. That would be great. Okay, and then what do we have? Rest station. Okay, ready for the next slide? What's this? I see epithelium, cells packed close together. I see basement membrane. The shape of these cells, it looks cuboidal. And how many from basement membrane to apical surface? Yeah, just one. So it's a simple cuboidal epithelium. And of course, here's a lead line pointing to this material between these tubes, which is connective tissue, right? Just connective tissue between the tubes. What do we call the center of a tube? The lumen, not labeled on this picture, but many pictures it is. All right, what is this? Blood, not almost complete, yeah, blood CT. And here's a lead line pointing to, yeah, you could say red blood cells, but you should also know them for the lecture exam as the erythrocyte. Okay, and then here's a lead line pointing to a lymphocyte, and it's a kind of white blood cell, but you should also know that's a leukocyte. Here's another lead line pointing to another leukocyte, but this one is a neutrophil. Okay. One thing that I didn't talk about, well, here's plasma. Okay, one thing I didn't talk about is this guy right here. That's a cell fragment. Again, it's important for preventing blood loss, and that's a platelet. Platelet is a little tiny little thing right here. You don't have to know that for the practicum. They come from a cell line that's similar to erythrocyte, but a little bit different. Yeah. They come from a cell that just always keeps kicking these little pieces off of itself. Okay. And a red blood cell comes from a cell line that doesn't quite do that. Comes more from a mitotic division. Okay. Okay. And then we got what? Rest station. All right. What do we got here? I don't know if you've seen this slide exactly, but I see a basement membrane right here. I see apical surface. What are these things? Those are cilia. And this is a special kind of cell. That's a goblet cell, stained with a kind of stain that we really haven't used in lab because it looks kind of red to me. Usually it's a white area, this mucus. Okay, so it secretes it onto the surface right here. These cilia are sweeping that mucus, and you can see some dust particles trapped in it, right up into your mouth, not down into your lungs. So this is a kind of epithelium that lines the trachea, for instance. Right, basement membrane, connective tissue. So from the basement membrane to the apical surface, what can you tell me about the number of layers here? That's a pseudo-stratified, because sometimes it looks like one big long columnar cell. Other times it looks like a bunch of cuboidal cells. So we call that pseudo-stratified ciliated columnar epithelium. Okay? And this is a really nice slide from a trachea, for instance. What's this? Looks a little weird, but I think you can see it. Here's the basement membrane. Here's the apical surface. Here's that free space with nothing in it. So it's an epithelium of some kind. And how would you classify it? Stratified, many cells. And these at the apical region are squamous. I was going to say stratified. I almost said that. Okay, it's not. It's squamous, right? So they're flat cells. So this is a stratified squamous epithelium. Right. Oh, here we got a tube. The tube's at a little bit of an angle, so it's not quite a circle, kind of like an oval. Basement membrane, apical surface. Here is this is a lumen of this tube right here. And these look nice and cuboidal to me, so it's a stratified cuboidal epithelium. What's this? Transitional, these little pillows on the top. Yeah, the transitional. It's a connective tissue, but which kind? Areolar CT. I see elastic fibers, collagen fibers. Oh, who can name these cells right here? What about the cells? The fibers we did good on. But what about the cells? Fibroblasts. That's right, fibroblasts, secreting fibers into the matrix. Okay, what do we got here? Adipocytes. This is a little bit different than the one that's in your book, okay, because now I see a nice nucleus. I can see some cytoplasm pushed all the way to the edge of the cell, but it's an adipocyte because here's that vacuole with fat on the inside. And what kind of tissue is adipose? It is a CT. That's a CT, right? Connective tissue. Okay, here we got something happening. It's not a tissue. It is what? Mitosis, right? And here is the nucleus. The nuclear envelope is still there, but now I can start to begin to see some chromosomes inside the nucleus. What phase of mitosis is this? Okay, if I can see chromosomes, then it's no longer in interphase. It's in prophase. And here the centrioles are starting to separate, and I see some microtubules forming the spindle apparatus, so this is prophase. Your book calls it early prophase. I don't care. I just want you to see that as prophase. Okay? And then, what do we got here? It's a CT, right? And it's dense, irregular connective tissue. I see a lot of collagen in all different ways. And here is reticular CT. And here is basement membrane, apical surface, columnar cell, many layers, stratified columnar epithelium. Okay. This was the lousiest picture in the book. Okay. This is smooth muscle cell. But look, if I look, the printing of this particular picture made it look like it has striations right here. I don't know if you can see them on the slide. Okay, but does smooth muscle have striations? No. So this is just an artifact of printing this particular picture, right? All right, and remember how important artifacts are. You got to learn how to read through artifacts. All right, what do we got here? Simple columnar epithelium. And here is dense regular CT. And here is, we haven't really looked at this, but next week, Wednesday we'll look. Here's the basement membrane. Here are many cells to the apical surface, so it's a stratified epithelium of some kind. These cells are flat, so this is a stratified squamous epithelium, and then we got connective tissue down underneath it. Yeah, that's the kind of skin. Oh, what's this? Cardiac muscle, intercalated disc, nice striations. That do belong there. That's not an artifact. Right, branching pattern. What's happening here? Okay, so the cells are beginning to pinch apart. Looks like the chromosomes are pulled all the way up against the centrioles right here. And so I would say telophase. And what else is happening here? Cytokinesis happens during telophase, right? At least in this class, you can say it always happens during telophase. And what is this? I see like a speckle pattern with a bunch of fibers. It's cartilage, and the fibers are here really, really strong, so that's fibrocartilage. That's partially right. Fibrocartilage what? CT. Yeah, put CT. When do we end at? 05. Okay. Class is over. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. I thought we went to 12:15. I'm going to have to check my schedule. Okay. See you. Hi. Hi. Yeah.
So on the book, it's some kind of blood tissue.
Yeah.
It's not lymphocyte and neutrophil.
Okay.
It says the white blood cells are leukocytes. Would you like us to put it on the practice
zone,
just like the book?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, the lab manual has white blood cell? Oh, no, the lecture notes.
Yeah, the lecture notes says leukocytes.
Yeah. For a practicum, exactly like what you have right here. If you give me a right answer, I'd probably give you full credit.
Okay.
There's usually more than one correct name for every item.
Okay.
In our body. You only have to tell me one correct name.
But would lymphocyte also mean white blood cell as well? Or?
A lymphocyte is a kind of white blood cell.
Kind of white blood cell.
So if I just have a line with a number by there, then you'd have to read the question to see what I'm asking.
Okay.
Okay.
And then I had a question. When I was going over the chapter, the first chapter.
Wow. Okay.